Tonight we have a special guest, and I think you're going to get some light tonight. I mean, this is just awesome. We've had Stacy before. She comes once a year. Her name is Stacy Womack. I marvel at women that have big families and manage all the responsibilities of being a mother, being a wife, you know, living with the pressures of the world. This gal's been married for 33 years to the same guy. You know, is that a miracle or what? Yeah. Six kids. Is that a miracle or what? You know, it's a miracle the kids grew up and the parents survived it. But she is the founder and the director of ARMS, which is an abuse recovery ministry. And I think God has something for somebody tonight. I mean, all day I have sensed that somebody needs to hear this tonight. And so I think that you're going to be refreshed when you hear Stacy. Stacy, come on up tonight and just share with us.
Well, I was trying to come up with something like really clever to say to you to start the evening off, but I really can't think of anything except for I get to wear this hands-free mic, and I've not worn one before, so I feel like a rock star tonight. That's kind of cool, so yeah. So I am thrilled to be here, and I think this is about my fourth time here, so it's very exciting to be here. And as you mentioned, Abuse Recovery Ministry and Services is a nonprofit, and we've been around for 15 and a half years, and we do multiple services. Our major service that we provide is for female victims of domestic violence, and we actually have over 55 weekly groups in 10 states right now, so we're pretty excited about that, how God has grown things. But we also provide services for men and women who have also used abusive behaviors as well, and a parenting program that's domestic violence specific, and as well as some youth violence prevention work as well. So we're a busy organization, and this has definitely been something that has been led by God. I don't think that I grew up as a little girl saying, someday I want to run a domestic violence agency. I don't think I ever thought that even once. In fact, I know that when God began speaking to me about ministry, I didn't know what he wanted me to do, and somehow I thought he'd have me doing something happy, you know? So domestic violence isn't necessarily a happy topic, but it's an important topic to cover. So I want to start off by asking, how many of you like to have things your way? Okay. Pretty much across the board, right? We all like to have things our way, and I think that there's, in our flesh, you know, we really want, we're pretty selfish and self-focused. I think that's pretty true of most of us. And the reality is, though, that we all have a right to a sense of personal power, and that is an appropriate thing. That's where you get your boundaries from and what you will accept and what you won't accept, and that's really a positive thing to have in our lives. Now, when we misuse that power, we move into a power over mentality where we have this attitude that we are somehow more important or better or smarter or have more rights than somebody else. And that is when it turns into more of that abuse side of things. Because when we think about domestic violence, and I usually don't like to even use that term, because when I say domestic violence, what's the first thing you think of? Physical abuse, right? Black eyes, broken bones, things like that. And yet the reality is that while domestic violence is the number one cause of injury to women in the U.S., it's actually the number one cause of injury to women in the world, it is actually, physical abuse is one of the least forms of abuse used. So we need to have this new understanding that it's really about power and control. It's really not about one specific behavior or another. It's whatever behavior someone is using to gain or maintain power and control. And it's not just that one time. Because we've all done something abusive at some point. We said something we shouldn't have said. We've done something we shouldn't have done. But when someone who is using a pattern of behaviors in an ongoing way within their intimate relationships, that's when it's stepped over into this power and control type of position that's unhealthy and creates problems, right? But the reality is that if abuse didn't work, no one would be using it. So there are some payoffs to using abuse. You know, they're not, you get some quick results, but there's a lot of costs in the long term. And a lot of times it's not until a lot has been lost before people actually get the help that they need. And so I'm thrilled to be able to be here and tell you a little bit so that if this is something that you struggle with, whether you've been someone who has been abused or someone who has used abusive behaviors, or maybe you've had a little bit of both in your life, that we're an agency that provides help for you in those things. So I want to talk about just a few other statistics before I go forward with talking about some of the other things. Did you know that 1 in 3 women will experience physical violence within an intimate relationship within their life? 1 in 3. That's a lot. So I don't care how big or how small churches, there are women sitting in every church who are experiencing this. And I'm going to talk about the perpetrator more in a male gender. And believe me, guys, I am not a man hater. I had a wonderful father. I have a wonderful husband who's sitting right here. We have 4 sons of our 6 children, our 4 sons. I am thrilled to be able to speak to you men, because the reality is that we need men to champion this cause. Because this is not an issue that's going to change until men stand up and begin helping other males in their culture stop this behavior, so that we can all be healthier, we can have healthy relationships. So that's a really big issue, isn't it? 1 in 3. And like I said, physical abuse isn't even the number one form of abuse used. So 90 to 95% of domestic violence victims, and this varies, depends on the study, some of them say 85% or more, but again, whatever number that is, it's still the primary person who is being victimized are the women in the relationships. And I'm not saying that women don't use abusive behaviors, because they do. It doesn't make it okay, whoever's using it. Man or woman, abuse is not okay, period. But as far as the person who's gaining power from their abusive behavior, generally it's the men. It tends to work better if you're bigger, stronger, have some privilege that society gives you. I think as women, if we were the bigger, stronger ones, we'd probably be the primary aggressors. You know, because it would work better for us if that were the case. So I'm not being negative towards male gender in this. I just think it just happens to work a little bit better. So when we talk about our primary aggressor, we're talking about somebody who uses abuse and gains power and control. And then when we talk about a secondary aggressor, we're talking about someone who uses abusive behaviors but also has been a victim of abuse, may currently be the victim in the abusive relationship, but they're using abusive behaviors back. And again, it does not excuse the behavior, regardless of its primary aggression or secondary aggression, or whether it's male or female, because abuse isn't okay no matter what. But there's very much a different power differential between someone who's a primary and a secondary aggressor. Domestic violence, like I mentioned, is the number one cause of injury to women, more than auto accidents, muggings, and rape by a stranger combined. 70% of men who batter women also batter their children, making the presence of spousal abuse the single most identifiable risk factor for predicting child abuse. Boys who witness domestic violence are twice as likely to abuse their own partners and children when they become adults. So this is something that is cyclical, okay? Abuse is a learned behavior. You can learn to give it, you can learn to take it, like I said, you might learn to do a little bit of both. And I work with all of them, because we have our men's groups that provide services for men who are abusive. We also have groups for women who have those victim issues but also use abusive behavior. So I understand how we hear a lot of the cyclicalness in their childhood, how they saw it, how they witnessed it. In Oregon, children who witness domestic violence is considered a felony. And that's because children who witness abuse have the exact same effects as children who are directly being abused. And sometimes we think, well, it's not that bad because, look, they're not hurting their children. But the children witnessing that, they're actually finding they're having higher rates of mental health issues. You know, such a powerless place to be as a child, not to be able to help someone that you love who is being hurt. So there's a lot of reasons why we should be addressing this. You know, and I really believe that domestic violence is really one of those things in our society that causes a lot of our social issues, because it starts in the home. And it's kept silent most of the time. People aren't talking about it. People feel embarrassed by it. They feel shame by it. So it's really hard to come out and talk about it. And yet, church is where we're supposed to come up with our problems, aren't we? And yet sometimes I come to church, and I know a lot of people who act like everything's okay, but really the reality is that we have problems. That's why we come here. That's why we need to come and help each other with these problems that we face. So when you think about all the issues that some of you have had in your lives. Some of you may have grew up in a home where this was happening, and how powerless that made you feel, and how much it damaged your own personal self-esteem, and how that affected the choices that you made growing up. And we have a lot of men who will tell us in our groups, they'll say, you know, I vowed I would never be like my father. And they thought they weren't because they weren't hitting, but they were using all the other forms of abuse. And as they worked through the program, they realized that that was an issue for them. They really had become their fathers, and they needed to break that cycle. They needed to learn a new way of seeing things and a new way of handling things and believing about things so that they could change the behaviors that they have, which is so powerful when we see men do that, and it's so encouraging to see that happen as well. So when we talk about abuse in our groups, we talk about it in terms of 8 different categories. So we have physical, psychological, verbal, financial, sexual, property, spiritual, and animal. And I'm going to go through kind of each one of these and give you examples so that you can have a better understanding of what I'm talking about. So I'm going to start with physical because that's the one that most people recognize, right? The hitting, pushing, slapping, shoving, you know, spitting. We include that in there. Pinching, tripping, hair pulling, headbutting, anything physical like that. Grabbing, making someone move against their will. Any of those kinds of things would be a part of physical. But we also include posturing. So you don't actually have to touch a person to be physical. Sometimes just standing up is enough to intimidate a person, to control someone, to make them back down. Or getting right in their face. Or raising a hand or a fist without actually throwing it. That physical type of abuse where you're not actually touching the person. For those who use abusive behaviors, if they can control without being physically abusive, they will. So usually it's when they begin to feel a loss of control that they begin to up their levels of abuse. Psychological abuse is the number one form of abuse used. Psychological abuse is often called emotional abuse. And emotional abuse is very damaging to our soul, our mind, will, and emotions. And we need a healthy mind, will, and emotions to deal with life appropriately, correct? So when that's damaged, it has great effects. So our women in our groups that we work with will tell us, you know, physical abuse, yeah, that's scary, but you know, that heals really quickly. It's the psychological and verbal forms of abuse that do the most damage because those things replay in your head. I'm sure every single one of you in the room here can think of a time either as a child or as an adult that someone had said something to you or treated you in a certain way, using those words or making you feel like you were stupid, or whatever, or ugly, or unworthy, and how you still have times where you fight those feelings of, am I this way? So those psychological abuses can really be impacting. So things that fit under psychological abuse would be things like crazy making would be the most common. So making somebody feel like they're, you know, going crazy. We've had women share that their husbands would put a pot in the linen closet to make her think she put it there. Men who've told their wives and girlfriends that she's crazy. They just tell her that on a regular basis. I think one of the most telling examples that I had was a woman who came to my group, and she had a pen that she liked, and she always kept it on the end table right by in between their favorite chairs. And she was vacuuming, and her husband was sitting in the chair next to the end table, and she goes, "Hey, where's my pen?" And he goes, "What pen?" She goes, "No, I leave my pen here all the time. I always leave my pen here." And he goes, "There's no pen here." So she continues back, and she says, "Oh gosh, I wonder what I did with the pin." She gets done vacuuming, puts it back and cleaner away. She comes out, here's her pin sitting on the coffee table, the end table there. And she goes, "Well, there's my pin." And he says, "Well, it was there all the time." So this is a kind of crazy making to make someone feel off balance. I often use the example of standing on the ocean. Any of you stand right where the water comes in, it laps in, and you're standing still, but the water is pulling the sand out from underneath your feet. And you never feel like you're actually solid. And that's kind of what psychological abuse does. Psychological abuse also includes things like isolation, keeping you from your friends and family. And sometimes it could be outright telling you can't have friends and family. More often than not, it's also just making a victim pay. So she's not told she can't go and spend time with friends, but when she comes home, she pays for it. And so it becomes easier not to go out than it is to deal with the punishment when she gets home. Or he's made it so uncomfortable for friends and family to come over, they don't want to come over anymore. So frequent moves is a part of that. You know, in my own church, when we started our women's group there, there was 3 women in my church who came to me and told me this was something that was going on in their relationship. And within 3 months, their husbands had moved them to another church. So that isolation, keeping their wife or their girlfriend from being able to get the help that they need, and not wanting the secret to come out. And so doing what they can to manage their image, to look good to everybody else, while they're still undermining her behind closed doors. So psychological abuse also includes stalking behaviors. And now there's some stalking behaviors that we would all recognize, right? Like, following someone or spying on someone. Now there's a lot more cyber stalking. That type of thing is a bigger deal now. Guys using GPSs on cars and phones and things like that. But I also want you to notice, especially among the younger generation, multiple calling and multiple texting. Okay, it's one thing to call someone and, hey, can you call me back? But it's another thing when you're getting 50 calls, 100 calls, texts from somebody. That's not okay. You know, those are stalking behaviors. And really, when someone is using power and control tactics, really what they're saying is, I don't trust God. So I have to have the control because I don't trust God for me or this person. And there's fear that's driving that. There's insecurity that's driving those kinds of behaviors as well. And so understanding what's going on behind that. Psychological abuse would also include things like public humiliation. I had a guy who said that they went to a church barbecue, she went to sit down, he pulled the chair out so she fell on the ground. That would be an example. Making fun of somebody, laughing at someone when they make a mistake. Things like that would be part of that public humiliation. And again, this along with verbal are the ones that the women say, this is the most damaging. And yet, how do you explain psychological abuse to someone? Because there's no bruises. And people recognize physical abuse as being abusive, but how do you tell somebody, well, he's doing these weird things, but they just sound like normal stuff, kind of, or just, well, what are you doing? You know, usually sometimes women are asked, what are you doing to make him so upset, you know? And it's because of people's lack of understanding around these issues that happens. So it's really hard to explain power and control as opposed to a normal marital conflict that's going on, because sometimes they have some things that look similar, but they're not the same, because abuse is about power and control. Okay, it's different. So verbal abuse, obviously we got every category has those ones that are very obvious and ones that aren't so obvious. So yelling, screaming, name-calling, swearing, put-downs, accusing, blaming, belittling, being very critical, continuing arguing, but it can be more subtle than that. It could be sarcasm. You know, sarcasm always has a little bit of truth in it. That's what makes it funny, but it's always at someone's expense. And so actually the word sarcasm means the tearing of flesh. So sarcastic comments, while they can be funny and while they're not always abusive, generally have a very negative impact on other people, and it's not a healthy way to communicate. So we talk about that in group. Also, things like the silent treatment. We think, well, how's the silent treatment verbal abuse? Well, it's a way to control conversation. So again, you have to look at this control from those things that are very obvious that people say, oh yeah, that's abusive, to those things that aren't as obvious that people don't necessarily recognize as being abusive. So then we have financial abuse. I brought my phone up here so I could see like what time it was, and now it's not working. So then we have financial abuse, which is things like controlling the finances, not letting their partner have access to finances or know where they're at in the finances, or only giving partial information about the finances, hidden accounts, secret purchases, unilateral financial decisions where they're making all the decisions that way. Some of our women have shared that they'd have to turn in the receipt with, they'd buy groceries and they bring the receipt with the change. Sometimes that their partners have even gone through the bags to make sure that everything they bought was, you know, in those bags. So any kind of financial control, keeping her from working or making her work, giving an allowance, which is what you do for a child, it's not something you do in an intimate relationship. You know, it's something that you agree upon as a couple. So financial abuse is something that we see even after couples separate, where they're not paying child support or spousal support, hidden accounts, secret purchases, all those kinds of things would fit under financial abuse. Property abuse, we think, well, gosh, I never really thought about property abuse as being domestic violence. But again, if someone can prove that they're scary without actually physically touching someone, this is the way to do it. You throw things. You know, I had guys, you know, punch a hole in the wall right next to her head, and she's terrified. And he goes, what? I didn't even touch you. You know, but But this property abuse is one of the things. You know, breaking phones is a common thing. Throwing remotes, those are common things. Slamming doors, you're making a statement. Slamming cupboard doors, you know. Sabotaging the car. Driving erratically or fast to frighten or punish the other person. That's a very, very powerless place to be when you're not in the driver's seat and the other driver's driving crazy. I had one woman, she had 9 kids, and they got to the point where none of them would get into a car with their father because of the way, they never knew what was going to set him off, what was going to be hard to deal with. Sexual abuse is another one that people mostly understand, and we talk about in terms of everything from raped, unwanted touch, to sexual jokes, sexual put-down, sexual name-calling, to pornography, affairs, all those things would fit under that, to the more subtle things like, for instance, we include in here pouting for sex. And you think, well, how is pouting abusive? I don't understand that one. Again, you have to think in terms of power and control. So if he pouts and complains and whines enough until he's made her life hell, till she finally says, okay, fine, then he's just coerced her into doing something that she didn't want to do. And that is not God's design for sex. It's supposed to be a giving of yourself, not a taking. So we talk about it in very broad terms in every single category. Spiritual abuse, because we're a faith-based organization, so we're dealing with everything from a Christian perspective. So everything from misusing scriptures to get their control or put the person down to going to the pastor to make her look like she's crazy or she's the one with the problem. That's common among regular church attenders. Also, things like putting her down for her beliefs, questioning her salvation. We also include in here any abuse done in front of or to her child, because the most common analogy used for God is Father. And so if their earthly father is harsh, mean, and cruel, then it really affects their ability to relate with God. And probably one of the hardest things for me is to see both the men and women who've come into our programs who grew up in Christian homes, especially pastors' homes, where their fathers who were pastors were abusive, and how that twisted their idea of God. And it really messed things up for them. And so that's going to have a very negative impact on their ability to relate with God. So, and then the last one's animal abuse. And again, we don't always think, well, what about animal abuse? Well, this is, you know, the obvious things, like you're harming the animal, but it's really about controlling the other person or punishing the other person. So you kick the dog or you throw the cat because you know it's gonna hurt the other person. Threatening to get rid of the animals, getting rid of the animals, killing the animal, threatening to kill the animal, all those things, not feeding or watering the animal. But we have even more subtle ones than that because we've had people share in our groups, you know. So my favorite one, although I don't know that it was actually animal abuse because it really wasn't directed at a person, was this guy who decided that he could train his fish to stop picking on the littler fish. So he put a cardboard up because it would never pick on the little fish when he was watching. So he put cardboard up and then he'd slap it every time it picked on the little fish. Not so sure that worked so well. But actually the ones that I'm talking about are more like getting an animal that you know the other person is afraid of or allergic to. We had one of the women in our group, our secondary aggressives group, who this is very passive aggressive, but it's a much more subtle form. She took the pillow and rubbed it all over the cat because he's allergic to the cat, laid the pillow back on the bed so he'd wake up the next morning with puppy eyes. So it would be a subtle form of using animals to control or to punish, right? So there's a lot of different things that play into this, and it plays out in a cycle. So, you know, I don't know that I'm going to go through the cycle right now, but it doesn't just happen one time. It just continues to happen. So there's, you know, the abuse, and then there's this time where they're apologizing and saying they're sorry and promising never to do it again, but there's really no action with it. And so it's not true repentance, because when you repent, it's a heart change. You turn and go in the opposite direction. So it's more about controlling her back into relationship. And just changing the form of control doesn't make it right. So, and victims understand the cycle very well. It's a little bit harder for our guys. It takes a little bit of thinking to work through this process, but for those who've experienced abuse, even if it's been your parents, can write out those cycles of what they've seen, how it's played out over and over again. You know, to going into this whole, well, if you had not done this, I wouldn't have done that, and going through this time that seems kind of normal, but it's not really normal because you can't really talk about the abuse. To where you feel, the victim feels their partner is starting to get very negative, and for the abuser, he's thinking very negative thoughts about his partner, and all the things that bug him and why he was so justified to abuse before, and then him working into planning, you know, well, you know, I work hard and you know what, she never has the house clean. If I get home and the house isn't clean, that's it. I'm just going to let her have it. And it's not even like a specific, I'm going to do this. It's just, it's giving themselves permission to walk in the door and already be upset and look for those things that they can actually pick on so that they can have the excuse then to be abusive. And more often than not, it's bringing up topics they know their partner will be upsetting so that she raises her voice. So then it's her fault that the abuse happened. And this happens over and over and over again. And there's a lot of little cycles that aren't as overt. And then there's those ones that are really stand out, the big ones that happen. They can happen weekly, daily. They could, it could be months. It could be years apart. But all the other controlling behaviors, those ones that aren't so obvious, that make up the vast majority of abusive behaviors, that people don't understand, is really what's going on in the relationship. And it's bringing death to that person and to the relationship and to the family as a whole and then to society as a whole. And so I know that God's heart is to see this change so that we can stop this pattern. And if you've experienced this, this is your opportunity to really take God's hand and going, you know what? I don't want this to continue in my family. I want to see an end to this cycle that's going on. And I want to unlearn some of these things that have been unhealthy, even in the giving or the taking of it. What do you need to learn differently? What is God wanting to show you? And so, you know, we have our Her Journey class, our victim recovery group, in multiple locations. And actually, this church here offers it. So if you're interested, I've got some brochures in the back. And you can give us a call and we can give you information about day and time on that. If you're interested in our other programs that we have, you know, we're here to serve you and help you however we can. And I know that that every time I speak that God knows specifically who he's talking to here. And I know that you know who you are, even if I don't know who you are. And I want you to know that there is hope because we see God restore lives and relationships. And there is hope in this, that it doesn't have to end the way the world says it has to end. So thank you. I appreciate you allowing me to share.